The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Sam Lee is with us. We're going to get to him in one sec. Here's Mark Lawrenson on last night's show speaking about the impact John Stones is making at Manchester City. Have a look.
He's still relatively a kid, so, you know, you look at those. You basically look at Liverpool and you look at Manchester United and they've got problems at the moment. They're not insurmountable problems, but you look at City and they seem to have solved their biggest problem, which was, you know, which two centre-backs to play with.
Yeah. It's hard not to be happy for John Stones.
Oh, fantastic, because obviously, you know, like Moyes, as you know, is one of my big friends, and he just said you won't get a nicer lad. You won't get a lad as well who's so into his football and trains hard and works hard and lives really, really well. So I know it's good for him. He's obviously just stuck at it in training. And he's basically, and I never thought he would be able to do this, he's basically persuaded Pep Guardiola that he's still a player and still very, very useful at the moment. He's as good as anybody in that Manchester City team.
Yes, that's Mark Lawrenson speaking with Joe last night. Sam Lee of The Athletic is with us. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We might actually start there off the back of that. What is John Stones' renaissance down to?
A bit of luck, first of all, and not in the sense of his performances, because his performances have been fantastic, but a bit of luck, because I think City planned to sell him in the summer. They were going to keep Eric Garcia. In the end, Barca came for Garcia. They thought, OK, we'll sell him, keep John Stones. In the end, they didn't sell either of them, and they had a bit of a problem with five centre-backs. And we saw in October, maybe even November time, that Garcia was playing instead of Stones, but Stones then took his chances. A bit of it as well, and I mentioned this because Guardiola's mentioned it a couple of times whenever he's been asked about the John Stones renaissance. He's mentioned a couple of personal problems that he had, certainly last year. I remember there was a time last February where he didn't even get in the squad for the game against Spurs and Garcia got in again. There was like an issue relating to his breakup with his partner, and Guardiola decided his head wasn't in the right space to play football. So there's been a few things there. And also there's been injuries as well. Last season was his big chance, and that's why they were willing to let him go in the summer. When Laporte got injured, it was, OK, this is the big chance for John Stones to come in and make his mark. And he didn't do it. He got injured straight away. He came back into the team. He'd played badly, get injured again. And he was just always in and out, couldn't get a run going. So he's had that little bit of a sliding doors moment in the summer where he's still at the club. Got injured again at the start of the season, played well against Wolves on the first day, got injured again. But since then, Guardiola's used him in a couple of games, you know, in midweek, Champions League, League Cup. Played really well, to the extent where Laporte had a little bit of a dip. Stones came back in, and with his head in a better place after, you know, kind of getting over those personal problems a bit, no injury problems, and just being able to focus on his football a bit, little like Mark Lawrenson said, been able to get back in the team. And he's undroppable at this point in time, for sure.
It really helps that he's got what looks like a world-class partner beside him, making sure that any mistakes he does make might be mopped up. You know, we can't overstate the impact that Diaz has had, really.
No, I mean, there's an argument that the impact has made. It makes Diaz the City's player of the year. I think, as somebody put it yesterday, if you were looking at City with cold eyes, you'd probably still say it's De Bruyne, and that's probably fair enough. But I don't think anybody was expecting this from Diaz. You know, City wanted to make a bit of a statement in the market, and, you know, there was conversations about Koulibaly, but that never came off. But the idea with Koulibaly would have been, well, City are going to sign this bloke for however much money. Everyone knows him. Top quality player. He can come in and play next to Laporte. He'll have a huge impact on City and he'll send a message to the Premier League. They then tried to get some others and then they got Diaz, and it wasn't quite that impact. It was, you know, Man City have signed Diaz. Not too many people knew too much about him. Certainly didn't send a statement, but I mean, he has now. And he's just one of those defenders that relishes defending. He likes all the heading and the blocking and the tackling and the interceptions and all that kind of stuff that, don't get me wrong, a City defender has to have. But if you can imagine a split between being good on the ball and being a good defender, it's normally probably been about 60-40 in favour of being good on the ball at City. I think with Diaz, they found somebody who's probably 60-40 or 70-30 in favour of being a good defender. He's good on the ball as well, but his priority and his, you know, his main traits are defensive. And he just relishes that kind of old-fashioned defending, which City probably haven't had since Kompany. He's a big leader. We did an article on him in the summer. We spoke to people who work with him at Benfica, and they just said he talked constantly, always leading by example. And they didn't think that even coming to England and, you know, a new language would impede that, and it hasn't. Guardiola spoke about that leadership quality recently. He said he's always in the gym early, setting the example, and Guardiola loves these people who, he uses the phrase, they live 24 hours a day for football, and he says Diaz is one of those. So yeah, on and off the pitch, he's really kind of galvanised the team in a way, and for that reason, there is an argument for him to be their player of the season for sure.
Sam, Pep Guardiola turned 50 yesterday. You've got a long read up on The Athletic right now. You go decade by decade through Pep Guardiola's career. To what point has the evolution reached now? Are we seeing a different kind of Pep Guardiola this season at Manchester City than even the early stages at City?
Well, I think he's doing something different at this point, because back in, you know, October, November, when it wasn't going so well, it was leading up to him signing the contract, but he hadn't at that point. There was still a bit of doubt about whether he would stay or not. I don't think he knew until about the week before he did it, or the few days before he did it. And even after that, you know, the performances didn't pick up. And people were looking at City going, well, if he's going to be successful here, then he's going to need to rebuild a team in a way that nobody's really done, and then go and win the league with them again, you know, since Alex Ferguson, or only Alex Ferguson, really. No other manager's been able to oversee that, the kind of slump, and then put them back at the top of the mountain again. And obviously, we don't know. It's too soon to say if he's going to do that, but they certainly look good. And that's because, yeah, he's kind of turned them around. And I've got to admit, I was sceptical about it. I was saying that they should have kept him as manager because, you know, for Manchester City or for any club, where do you go after Pep Guardiola? It's going to go downhill, inevitably. But the doubt remained about whether he could get the team playing, I suppose, back to their old levels. And it wasn't just the fact that it was the start of the season and there was COVID problems and there was the lack of the pre-season, because last season they weren't bad by any means, but they had dropped off. They were too weak defensively, and they did score enough goals, but they weren't clinical enough where it really mattered. And that was basically still the issue they had. In October, November, they weren't creating too many chances either. So even when they'd sorted the defence out, it wasn't great to watch. A lot of fans were seeing them win games and come away thinking, something's not right here. And that went through all the way to December, and kind of culminated, I suppose, for City fans and everybody else watching in that Manchester derby in December, because people looked at that and thought, you could have gone for that. That was the week that United had gone out of the Champions League. A lot of City fans felt they were there for the taking. If Guardiola had a gamble, brought some subs on, gone more attacking. But his focus then was keeping it tight. He didn't want to concede goals. And that was quite new for Pep, you know, to prioritise the defence, to worry so much about the counter-attack that he wouldn't risk going and get a winner himself. You know, for somebody who is all about attacking football, that was strange. So at that point, everyone was thinking, what is going on here? But that was the turning point. And this is something that he's done this season that he possibly hasn't done in the past. Straight after that game, he started sending men forward. He abandoned all the ideas he had before about having the wingers, getting them to come inside, wasn't working too well. The two holding midfielders, which, you know, it was okay, but it wasn't working too well. It wasn't City that we know. But he built on that defence. He found ways to make them just as solid defensively, but get them going forward and attacking as well. And that's why probably that win at Chelsea was like, okay, something's coming together here. And since then, they've kept that up. Since the derby, really, they've got back to looking a bit more like their old selves. Guardiola's fixed the problems. Mark Lawrence hit the nail on the head, really. United and Liverpool, they've got issues, not insurmountable at all. If you're talking about the team that's probably got their act together the most at the moment, it's City. And that's because Guardiola's kind of assuaged those doubts, fixed a couple of problems in the team. And all they need to do now, really, other than keep it going, is just take a few more chances. So, yeah, he has kind of shown a different side to him. And Pep Guardiola at 50, he said the last few years at City, he's had to learn to adapt to the players and be adaptable. And he learned that at Bayern Munich. He thought, OK, I can't just play like Barcelona here. And to be fair, you know, 10, 11 years at the top of the game, he's still kind of, he's always ahead of the curve. He's always setting the trends. That's not easy. And that's what we're seeing at City at the moment, finding new ways to adapt and thrive, really.
One of the concerns in that early part of the season had been the fact that Aguero was injured and was out for so long, and who was going to score the goals. And obviously, you know, at the weekend, we saw the defence contribute with a number of goals. We've seen Phil Foden become the joint top scorer in the league so far. But what will they do about the goals issue? Are they reliant then on the goals being spread out across the team, or is somebody going to step forward from now to the end of the season to score the goals that will win the league?
I'm not sure if it's about somebody. I mean, the issue was, like I say, October, November, they weren't creating too much anyway. So when you combine that with the fact that they're not especially clinical, that's why they were either drawing games or just winning 1-0 and scraping through a bit, because the defence was, you know, strong enough to keep the teams out. And it was easy then to kind of say, make excuses for them, really, and just give reasons for it. And so, well, they haven't had a number nine all season. Aguero's been in and out, but mostly out. Jesus has been mainly out as well. But we've seen recently, even without those number nines, they can do it. Because, yeah, like, Ilkay Gundogan's been picking up the slack. He's got 4 goals in 6 games. De Bruyne is not scoring at the moment. The front three, you know, Sterling obviously scored that great goal the other night. Sterling was one of the biggest culprits for missing chances last season, and still this season. Jesus as well. Mahrez is up there in terms of the Premier League goal scoring stakes, but three of those came against Burnley. I think he's got 4 overall. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily the case that somebody's going to come in and pull their weight with the goals. Maybe that could be Aguero, because he's been unlucky with this kind of COVID isolation. Just as he was getting fit enough to return, he had to isolate for 10 days, so he's missed 3 games. Maybe it'll be him. But I just think it's going to have to be something they share out. And the beauty of the team, again, at the moment, is they are creating enough chances. So the logic being, well, if they create 6 or 7 chances with their strike rate, they'll probably get 1 or 2. And with the defence, that should be enough. So that could be enough without somebody getting 30 goals on their own. But what they do need is for De Bruyne to start getting a couple more, for Sterling and Jesus to quickly get above 10 and go from there. And for people like Mahrez, Bernardo Silva to chip in as well, which is what they had last season, even when they weren't scoring enough. But like I say, the difference now, the fact that the defence is so strong, it does take that burden off a little bit in terms of the goal scoring.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens next, because obviously Messi more than likely will become free at the end of the season, but at the same time Kylian Mbappe will be on the market, and if the price is right, then perhaps Haaland is on the market as well. And Pep Guardiola has signed a new deal, so we're all of that uncertainty that we had about what was going to happen at Manchester City has largely gone. I think there'll always be a little bit of a doubt with Pep and his track record, but the fact that he has signed the new deal, and if they were to win the league this year, it's an incredibly strong situation for them to be in a buying market where the whole team is fixed with the exception of one brilliant out-and-out striker.
Yeah, it's funny. I think a few fans have said recently they don't want the recent form to kind of cloud the idea that they do need a few good players. You know, again, people who aren't City fans watching this going, Man City need a few good players after the money they've spent and how well they're playing, whichever way they look at it. Yeah, I get that. But they haven't addressed the left-back situation for 2 or 3 years. Between Zinchenko and Ake, the way they're playing at the moment, they've got enough. But I do think they need to address that. A striker, and yeah, Haaland is the one everybody wants. I've seen reports that, you know, Dortmund won't sell him in the summer, but you never know the kind of pressure that the big clubs might put on. Mbappe, I think, from everything I've heard, is, you know, Real Madrid are in the driving seat for that one. Lukaku's been mentioned. Lukaku's somebody that came up when I was looking into who City could possibly get from, like, the data and statistics point of view recently. That's certainly an interesting one. They do need a kind of figurehead like that. There's left back as well. There's the midfield position, either a defensive midfielder, just for a bit of depth, really. Or, again, another example of how they've done so well this season is they've managed to replace David Silva. And recently, it hasn't looked like they've missed him. The way they've been getting men forward in creative ways, like João Cancelo coming forward and playing attacking midfield from right back, that's helped. You know, Ilkay Gundogan being further forward, that's helped. They could probably do with another player like Silva in that type that Guardiola loves so much, somebody who gets the ball and gives the ball and keeps the game ticking over. That would probably be somebody that would make them even safer if they were to win the league this season. That's how you think they would build going on to next season as well, and, you know, strengthening for the final 2 years of Guardiola's contract. But yeah, I think the money's there. It was reported the other day that the money's there and the type of players they're looking for. They had a look for those players last summer as well, which is generally how they go about things. They had a look at João Felix. They made an inquiry for him a year after they tried a bit to get him from Benfica. Obviously, he went to Atletico. Last summer, they went, would you sell him? And they went, well, clause. And the buyer clause is 300 million. So they went, okay, forget it. They had a look around for left-backs as well. Tagliafico, they spoke to his guys in the summer. And then they tried a bit towards the end of the window, but needed to sell Zinchenko to make it happen. And that didn't happen. And then there was a few links to midfielders in the summer. So, yeah, they had the money there, obviously, because they would have got Messi if they could. But in the end, everything's kind of been thrown forward. And now Guardiola's there. I would expect it's going to be full steam ahead on the reinvestment front in this coming summer, because they've done quite a bit of the due diligence already.
Right, that's pretty exciting if you're a Manchester City fan listening to that. Just one other thing we were chatting about this morning, Sam, is about Mikel Arteta and kind of how they're over this blip a little bit at Arsenal at the moment. There was a conversation before Christmas when Arsenal were going through that really sticky spell that they had made a terrible mistake that everybody knew was a terrible mistake at the time. And I thought it was a little bit of revisionism myself that, you know, the reputation that he had garnered at Manchester City was so good that he was qualified to get a big job, a manager's job at Arsenal. What was your opinion on that at the time and what is your opinion on that now? Is Mikel Arteta qualified to take a team from mid-table into the Champions League in the Premier League right now?
Well, I mean, first of all, Arsenal it's a huge job in terms of, you know, being a manager. It's a big club to manage. You know, there's a lot going on at boardroom level and that kind of stuff. I was doing a TV thing with Ian Wright recently, and he was talking about the difficulties involved in that, which is probably similar to Man United in recent years when you've not had everything your own way either. You've got a lot to manage and then, you know, that you've got to go and fix the team on the pitch as well. So it's not been easy. One of the things I thought was strange when, okay, admittedly, it wasn't going particularly well. And even when they were getting results, you know, they weren't playing particularly well. There wasn't much joy to their football, especially with all the crosses coming in, which is something we've seen City do when they're short of ideas. Everyone forgot they won the FA Cup. And I know, you know, teams can win the FA Cup and you never hear from them again, but to come in 6 months in the job, win the FA Cup, they beat City in the semi-final, they beat Chelsea so well in the final. That was when Chelsea were playing pretty well. I think Chelsea were favourites for that. So I thought that was, again, if we're talking about revisionism, I thought that was overlooked far too easily. And yeah, at the time, look, football being what it is, there's a lot of very qualified coaches out there around the world who can't get into the Premier League because they haven't played it. I was speaking to somebody yesterday who represents a Spanish-speaking manager who's managed at a World Cup, and he wants to manage in England, but he can't get in the door. I was speaking to another of Pep's former assistants who, you know, was looking around at jobs last winter, couldn't get in the door. It's almost like if you think of Spanish-speaking managers in this country, apart from the great Pep, of course, you know, Martinez, Poyet, people like that, you need to have, and again, Arteta himself, you need to have played in this country. So that's the game, effectively. But yeah, Arteta, with the reputation he'd built up, the way that he'd interacted with the players, he'd become incredibly popular at City, very good, very hands-on, had his own ideas, had his own style. Talking about Guardiola adapting, maybe that's something he's had to adapt to a bit. Although that's it, Mesut Ozil's just gone. He's finally managed to get rid of Mesut Ozil after, you know, Unai Emery couldn't. So he is very stubborn. So maybe there's a few lessons he's learning on the job. But no, last year when he got the job, I thought it was a good move for Arsenal. You know, the former player thing was very in vogue at the time, getting in somebody who gets it and, you know, who can maybe galvanise a fan base and a club. And with somebody who was a former player, but somebody who's also qualified for the job, obviously Solskjaer's doing a great job now, but I would say that Arteta was probably more qualified to get the Arsenal job than Solskjaer was for the Man United job. So no, I don't think it was fair that people were saying he didn't deserve it at the time. And I think now we see that sometimes you might have to ride out a bad patch in football. Lampard said it recently. He's probably a bit of an element there of saving his own skin a bit, but he was like, look, this is football. You have ups and downs. You have good patches and bad patches. And that's true. You know, we're so used to managers getting the bullet straight away. But it is true, you know, you do need to give managers time. There's so many examples over the years of that happening. And yeah, I think with Arsenal, they've got somebody who's definitely capable of getting them up there. Top four, obviously this season, the way it's gone with those teething problems, probably too much. But yeah, like I say, they won the FA Cup. They're a little bit back on track. They're stabilised. Slow progress, perhaps, but I do think it's progress.
Sam, good to have you with us. Thanks a million.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Sam Lee from The Athletic there, and as Owen said, you should try and check out that long read on Pep Guardiola. It's 5 minutes past.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.